Welcome to Public Health Out Loud, public health for the public. My name is Dr. Philip Chan. On behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Health, April is not only World Autism Month, but also Autism Acceptance Month. Here in Rhode Island, the Autism Project has provided quality support, training, and programming for children and adults with autism spectrum disorder, also known as ASD, since 1997. It's also been a helpful resource for families and those who work with people who have ASD. The organization was recently featured in the local news media for their work to inform and educate first responders to improve the way they interact and assist individuals with autism in emergency situations. Joining us today to talk more about this is Joanne Quinn, the Executive Director of the Autism Project. Joanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So Joanne, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your organization.
Sure. I am the executive director here at the Autism Project, and I'm going into my 23rd year. And I got involved because my youngest son, Patrick, who will be 29 in the middle of May, was in one of the demonstration classrooms that the founding mothers, as we referred to them as, at the Autism Project set up. Our goal is to educate anyone who engages with autistic people on how to do it better. We're not going to tell somebody how to do teeth cleaning. We're not going to tell somebody how to be a babysitter. We're not going to tell anybody how to be a mother, but we're going to give information so that your engagement with someone on the spectrum is better and more purposeful on both sides. So there's an understanding of what each other needs.
And I admittedly know a little bit less about autism, certainly as an adult physician. But when you hear these terms, autism and on the spectrum, talk to us about some of the basics here. What exactly is autism?
So autism is a neurodevelopmental disorder, and it's really characterized most by difficulties with social communication and social interaction. It's also some people are seen with very restricted and repetitive patterns of behavior or interest, sometimes called stimming, or what is their high interest. And it really, by definition, they're really present in early development, when usually before the age of three, but oftentimes they are not picked up because it really becomes a challenge when it interferes with your day-to-day living. We have quirky people in the world. We have people who choose not to talk so much. We have people who are really, one of our self-advocates said, how come people can paint themselves red, white, and blue and sit in Foxborough Stadium and do nothing but talk about the Patriots for three of the 12 months, and they're okay. But I like to talk about waste management systems and the efficiencies of it, and I have a diagnosis. So it's when it gets in the way of your day-to-day functioning that we recommend that people go and get a little more of a look at.
And talk us through, I understand this exists as a spectrum, but talk us through what this exactly looks like in a person. What are sort of maybe some of the minimal symptoms versus what does some more significant symptoms look like in a person?
You know, it is a spectrum. And Dr. Shore, Stephen Shore from Adelphi University, has been quoted, if you met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. They are all very different and unique, just like you and I and everybody else in the world. In terms of the impact, for instance, we have non-speakers and we have people who are very verbal. However, sometimes we also have people, one of the characteristics is lack of perspective taking, lack of being able to see how what you do impacts somebody else. And so sometimes you can have somebody who has no language who's more employable because somebody with language but has no perspective taking and lacks executive functioning skills and some other things, it's more difficult for them to really be a part of a team. So what we really work on here in the Autism Project, we do a tremendous amount of training. We do a lot of parent support, but training is really our passion and our mission because we want to teach skills, underlying skills that perhaps somebody on the spectrum, an autistic person, does not have that they need to be more successful across their day. But at the same time, we need to educate the community. We have a big push right now at the college level, the high school level, as well as the workforce, because our neurodivergent individuals who are coming through who are more language and more skills academically are landing in colleges and the workforce. And it's a real challenge because they've been good academically, but they haven't quite learned some of the lagging skills they need to be successful in a group setting. So we also have others who there's a new organization for profound autism who need 24/7 care. Some are verbal, some are not. but they cannot be left alone. And that is a really big issue coming up because they kind of feel like they're being left behind because everybody's talking about the success in the neurodiverse world. And we really need to remember that it is a spectrum and autism is everybody's different. This is my autism. I have no language, but I can speak, I can understand, and I can be hired versus somebody who has language but doesn't have the skills to be hired. So it's learning, it's big, it's difficult, but we're committed to educating the public, educating the workforce, educating the schools on what modifications and changes can be made so that your interaction is better, people more successful, and it's purposeful.
And you mentioned that most people are diagnosed before age of 3. How do you know that your child may have autism? And do you ever see people present a little bit later in life with symptoms of autism?
Ideally, they would be diagnosed before 3. In the DSM-5, the symptoms should be there and then going on. Unfortunately, a lot of our even more severe cases are not diagnosed until 4, 5, 6, 7 because of wait lists and capacity issues. And so our nonverbal, our kiddos who are have a lot of sensory challenges and have some self-stimming, those are red flags that get you into the early intervention in the pediatrician's office sooner. It's our neurodivergent individuals, especially young girls, who can mask their autism and they can fit in and they go along with the show until they can't, who are getting the later diagnoses. We here at the Autism Project, we get 10 calls a week from somebody who's 20, 25, 30 years old, who either is looking to get diagnosed or has recently been diagnosed. And when they receive the diagnosis, they're like, well, that makes sense. Because without the understanding of their neurology and how their brain takes information in differently, they think, I'm a loser. Why can't I get this? Why don't I have any friends? Why can't I get the academics? When if we can get an evaluation and we can get them the support, and if we always think, the diagnosis is information, right? You don't have to tell anybody else about it, but having a diagnosis, you can start to understand how your brain works and what it is that you need in order to be successful. And we can help you in advocating for that. So it's a spectrum, and where more and more people are being diagnosed, post high school, because that's when it all comes down, when all the structure's gone and the skills were not taught.
And who is the person that actually diagnoses this? Is this something that people should talk to their pediatrician about or their physician, or is it a specialist that usually makes this diagnosis?
It's usually a specialist, and but you should talk to your pediatrician. Also in Rhode Island, we're very lucky. Early intervention, you don't need a referral from a doctor. You can call an early intervention site yourself and say, I have concerns. The big thing about that, too, is we have community partners and information where people can have one-stop shopping to get all the information they need.
And I know that you've, in terms of education and training, that you've done a couple of videos. And I actually watched one of your videos that you just released. And I encourage our listeners to check it out. The video is called Emergencies from an Autistic Point of View, Sensory Overload and Elopement. And it can be found on the Autism Project website, theautismproject.org, all one word. And, I watched this video. It was about a person on the spectrum who has fallen, wasn't able to get up, unclear if the person was injured. And the video shows two ways to handle the situation from the perspective of the person with autism. And I have to admit that it was very eye-opening to me to really kind of see it firsthand through that point of view. Talk to us about the video and what inspired it and what the goal of that video was.
Sure. We're working with the Department of Justice, and actually, it is to reduce elopement. And elopement is somebody either slipping away, running away, however they get out of your sight, they're gone. And it was this whole funding is because of two young men, Avante and Kevin, who were in private school settings and they slipped out and both tragically drowned. So the Department of Justice has put a big push. And this is our second year of doing it, the videos. This year's video is a result of us doing a lot of work with autistic young adults and teens and getting input from them on what their life experience is like. And sensory overload is probably the number one thing we hear from the majority. Their neurology processes information differently, noises, confusion. And I know I'm in a panic anytime I'm even on the highway and you see all those at night, especially, and all the lights go and you can't see or figure out what you're supposed to do. But my brain can say, okay, just slow down and go around it slowly, where they don't have the privilege of that. And so we really wanted to show, with the camera being the point of view of someone on the spectrum, how it's different when you're in an emergency situation and here comes the rescue fire truck and police car, lights are blaring, noise is going, and suddenly all these people are jumping out and you hear all the clicking and then the metal hitting metal of everything coming out of the emergency. And then you have two people in your face talking to you and not understanding why you're not speaking back. And it's just heightened, heightened, heightened until you put that last glass on that tray and it tips over and I'm out of here. I'm gone. But if we change a little bit and roll up without the lights on, have EMTs who are educated in how to, again, engage with someone who's autistic, have some visual supports there, understand that their fidget toy is not just some fun thing, but it actually is their regulation. Because we're seeing more and more, there's such importance on regulation, whether it's, you know, sensory regulation, emotional regulation across all children, but especially for someone who has a communication disorder. If you're not regulated, it's really hard, if you are a speaker, to access your words. If you aren't a speaker and you're like, here they are again with all this stuff, I have no idea what's going on, I'm out. So that was the purpose, to keep people from having bad experiences with first responders. We do outreach events with them. So our people can meet first responders during a bounce house event or non-threatening events. So when they do show up, they know who they are. Families feel more comfortable to go and say, my son's an eloper. Because if you go into some of our houses, when my son was young, our windows were nailed shut. It would give a fire chief a heart attack if they saw, because we have to sleep. We have to keep our kids safe and they will leave. And so it's really getting parents and first responders to talk. Let us come to your house and make it safe for you. Let us work together on this, and back and forth is really the goal.
And yeah, I mean, that video was very eye-opening to me personally. And certainly as a physician, I could understand how it could be very overwhelming. And I learned a lot by watching it. And just encourage folks who want to learn a little bit more to check that out at theautismproject.org, all one word again. And a question for you, Joanne, how has the campaign been received so far? Has it been generally positive? What do you think?
Yes, actually, it has. And it really, what was really special about this is that it was made with a neurodiverse team. So we have the voices of autistic people within the production of it. We're using more and more young adults and adults with autism as advisors. We're going to have an even more important advisory board of adults to go over things so they can give us their input. The Autism Society of America is part of the DOJ grant too, and they are going to push it out, and the International Association of Police Chiefs too. So is getting a lot of views. And we actually have a full YouTube page that people can access through our website, how an ambulance should roll up. How should the firemen roll up? How should the police roll up? Here's what advocates and parents are saying. And for parents, how do you make a fire safety plan for your family? How do you practice getting out of the house if there's a fire? So we have all these resources and it's very well received. We're working really hard to get the word out. So we really appreciate this, because we've got so much good information that a lot of good people put a lot of effort into across, you know, other colleagues and collaborators, that we really want to get the word out.
Yeah, I was just reflecting too, in my prior life, I was actually an ambulance driver for 5 or 6 years. And I'm just reflecting if this issue ever came up when I was a little bit younger. This was about 20 years ago now. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I learned a lot from that and it was very eye-opening for me personally. Maybe you can summarize what some of the most important things about autism that you would like folks to know in our audience.
I think it's time that we all take time to understand neurodivergent people at all levels and shift from somebody who doesn't speak isn't capable to someone who speaks is overly capable, and just understand that they are humans and assume competency on both sides, but figure out, either with their support person or the teacher, how can I make them be their best self? What kind of supports do they need? If something works in kindergarten, if they have a visual schedule, if they have a big board schedule and they have sensory breaks and all this, and the child is very successful in kindergarten, by all means, continue that into first grade. And we use the example, somebody's failing in kindergarten, but oh, look at that, he gets a set of glasses and whoop, the world lights up and he can understand what's expected of him and do his job. Then you go to first grade and say, oh, well, we don't wear glasses in my class. He'll be fine. You don't take his reading glasses away from that child. So don't take the supports that have been proven year after year to work with somebody, because it's about interpreting our world for them, but also about providing a secure way for them to communicate. Even if it's the basics of yes or no, we want our kids to be able to say no so they aren't just rote compliance, because that gets them in trouble. We want people to have choices in life, right? So learn how they do it, what it looks like at the different levels. We have people working here at the Autism Project, and there was a young man, and he needed to get his information in writing. So we would send office memos if we needed to explain something to him that needed to change. And we needed to follow up with him with that to make sure things were going through. But versus going in and talking to him, because it's very anxiety producing for him to have, oh, the director's here talking to me, and the anxiety would go up. He can't hear a word you're saying because he's anxious, and his auditory is his strength. So learn that if we need to tell him something, we send an office memo with explicit, this is why, and this is why we need to do it, you know, and then you can come in and say, we'll discuss this at 2 o'clock. And so this prep, he has context, he has information, and if he doesn't want to talk about it, we're happy to go back and forth in written, because written word is the best way for him to understand what we need versus Charlie Brown's teacher, wah, 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 right? So learn, take the time, it's worth it. They're wonderful. They deserve to belong and be included in our, to the best of their abilities. And what they're doing has to be purposeful. And that's, I think that's our big thing. They need to feel safe. They need to be heard, and they need to have purposeful lives.
We're here with Joanne Quinn, Executive Director of the Autism Project. Joanne, thank you again so much for joining us. As we come to a close here, any final thoughts for our listeners?
Two things. I really encourage you to go to our website and look at all the safety we have. Elopement is huge. Elopement occurs in 49% of people with autism spectrum disorder. Drowning in the ocean state, drowning across the world is 46% of the deaths of young children with autism. We had a tragedy here. There's a tragedy in Boston, and summer is coming. Swim lessons, everybody. They're more available. And we have all that information at our annual walk, the Imagine Walk, April 28th, down at Goddard Park. It's not too late to register. It's a big community event, a lot of information, and we'd love to have people come out and join us.
Joanne Quinn, thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And you can find all this information and more on the website, theautismproject.org, all one word. Please do check it out. And Joanne, thank you for sharing such wonderful information with us and all the work that you do in general.
Thank you.
In closing, I also want to thank Erica Collins, our executive producer, and Carol Stone, our technical director. I again want to thank Joanne Quinn for joining us today. I'm Dr. Philip Chan, signing off on behalf of the Rhode Island Department of Health. Thank you all, and be well.